At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. Albert Breer is here. Mitch Goldich is here. I'm Connor Orr. Extra long hello today because this is the last episode we're going to record before the season kickoff. 2024 is here. How's everybody feeling? Football is here. The Eagles and the Packers are on their way to Brazil. Thursday night football. Sunday night football. We're going to think about nothing but this giant corporate gaming entity for the next 6 months. Is everybody excited? What's going on?
Oh, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go.
I missed my flight. I'm supposed to be on my way to Brazil, too. No, I guess I'm going to miss that one.
Mitch lived on Parisian time for the Olympics and did an excellent job. He's now going to live on Sao Paulo time for Brazil until the Eagles get done playing down there.
Is it the same time as us, or is it an hour ahead?
I think it might be the same. It might be an hour difference. It's no more than an hour, though.
This is Mitch's commitment to the bit, you know?
Okay.
Well, sure. You know what? I will live on Brazil time the entire NFL season, Connor. That's how committed I am.
It does feel a little ridiculous that we're doing this, like Friday night football. I was explaining this to people I know, and they're like, are you excited for the NFL season? And I said, sure. Do you go up to teachers and do you say, are you excited for school to come back? Are you excited for the kids to come back? And they're like, oh, you don't say it that way. You watch football for a living. Yes. We got Thursday night football, so we'll be up until 2 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. We got Friday night football. We're going to be up until 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday. Sunday night football. We're up at 2. So just, you know, I'm trying to just temper my excitement, find a way to balance the sleep schedule. Me and Sean McVay are no different. We're just trying to get healthy and still do what we love. So that's the goal here. And we have a very, I don't know what you would call it, special edition of the show today where... You know, I've seen other outlets do this, guys, with computers. Absolutely laughable. What a joke. We did it the right way. We did it the human way. We've predicted every single game of all 272, every single game of the 2024 season. So you guys don't even have to watch. I have Mitch Goldich here because he's the editor on the project, and he's going full Steve Kornacki later in the episode to explain an epic situation. Five-way tiebreaker. Was it five-way tiebreaker?
You had five teams in the AFC tied for the final wild card spot. And that is, I feel like every year you give me a fun little challenging problem, and this might have been the most interesting one you've ever sent me.
It's not on purpose. But we'll get to that. I'm gonna
It's not on purpose. You couldn't do this if you tried. I want to ask how you're feeling, because you always talk about this. So you do this every year. I've been on the pod the last few years to talk about this. I feel like you always tell us it's your favorite thing that you do, but then secretly you hate it. And when it comes out, you are such a ball of stress. And so this year it came out a little bit later than usual. And the other thing that was new about your strategy is that you immediately took a few days off right when it was published. So maybe you weren't even there for some of the blowback. So now that this is out in the world, how are you feeling relative to past years?
Okay, let's be real. I was searching my name on Reddit, and let's just call it what it is, okay? Searching my name on Reddit, and someone posted the link to it, and there was the cavalcade of comments like, this is the same Jack Wagon who picked the Patriots to go to the playoffs last year. However, there were like four or five comments defending last year's post and they were like, listen, Connor got 6 of 7 in the NFC and no one's talking about this. So there are some people out there supporting the cause. They are behind the all 272. And so I left being excited. You know why, though? Because I tweaked my formula last year after I would say the Patriots thing wasn't even the biggest debacle. I think all of us in this podcast now are somewhat aware of the fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers took a great deal of exception to being picked as a 3-win team, and rightfully so. They won a lot more games than that. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to the drawing board and I said, guys,
keep hearing about it. Thanks, Connor.
You'll notice, by the way,
I'm the freaking complaint box for Connor on that one.
I know. Yeah. Whenever I do something that's like kind of out of bounds, Albert is the one that gets the text. It's like, God, what the hell is wrong with this guy that you work with?
And Albert's, who is Connor Orr?
Albert's like, I don't know, some weird guy. I don't even think I work with him.
That's always my favorite one is like, is acting like you don't know who someone is when they say something you don't like.
Like, yeah, I have no idea. Sorry, dude. Never met the guy. Don't like him, though. So you'll notice, by the way, so I kept, like, there's a lot of Bucks fan sites that are very good, by the way. I think the Bucks maybe have the best, and this is totally pandering, but I think that a lot of the Bucks have some of the best, like, independent fan coverage of their team, and I've just been getting ripped apart constantly. And so you'll notice this year for the power rankings, first one debuted today for the season, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are just going to be segments of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Wikipedia page throughout the year. So I can't say anything that is going to offend anyone from the Buccaneers fan base. So like if you go to like all the other teams in power rankings this year are like, oh, the Eagles might have a good season, Vic Fangio, whatever. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers one just says the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are an American football organization based in Tampa Bay, Florida. And we're going to do straight Wikipedia on that one. So we're staying out of Tampa.
Well, Connor, I do think that picking the Bucks to go 17-0 and then lose at home in the divisional round was a bit harsh. You didn't have to do that in your picks.
So anyway, the Buccaneers debacle last year motivated me to alter my process. And here's what changed. Last year, you start in Mitch's favorite alphabetical order, right? Alphabetical by division, alphabetical by city name. And so what happens is you get down to like the NFC West and you got to make up like 50 losses because you're getting cute up at the top with the AFC and you're generous and you're benevolent and everybody's getting in. And then down at the bottom, you got to make some hard decisions and you got to bury some people. So the Cardinals had one win last year, right? And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had 3 and New England accidentally had 11. Whoops. And so we're here. We've arrived at a new place where I'm filling it out much more individually. If I notice one team getting out of control, I go down there and I take care of it. We did AFC, NFC, AFC, NFC, AFC, NFC. So we've arrived at this point where I think it's far more well-rounded. This is going to be the best one. And so I'm going to run these by you guys. And we're going to go kind of like, we'll go rapid fire by division, and then I just want to have a conversation about it. And I want you guys to tell me where I'm wrong, where we made a mistake in the algorithm. Again, we don't have high-powered computers like some of our competitors do. We're sitting down at the abacus, me and Mitch Kornacki, and we're doing this together. So are you guys ready? And I want loud complaints and disagreements, okay? Is that all right?
Ready. And we should say that our staff predictions will be published at the MMQB on Wednesday. So, and I think did you stick to your picks here for our actual playoff brackets? But regardless, yes. Albert and I, our playoff picks will also be visible to the public on Wednesday. But did you? Yeah, you did. I think you kept these 14 teams in your bracket for Wednesday, right?
I kept these 14 teams, and I also went by record order for my power rankings. So
I mean, like, it's just it makes me like anxious just thinking about having to do what you had to do, Connor. Like I'm somebody who views doing predictions as having zero upside for me. Like they're like it, how I do my job. It's got absolutely no upside, and I understand why we do it and like that, why it's popular and all of that. But I hate doing predictions because it just there's no upside for me. Because if I get them right, then like no one's going to remember that. And if I get them wrong, then like I got to hear about it. So for you to have to do every single game, like just gives me a splitting headache and will be the worst thing ever.
Here's what I don't like about it the most. And I said this at the, I wrote about it, right? There's no hiding, right? Because the move for all of us, and I've done it before too. The move for all of us is always, before the season starts, you find that one team. I remember like when maybe like Matt Patricia's second year with the Lions, everyone was like, you know, no one's talking about this year, the Lions, like after they went like 4-12 or whatever. It's such an easy thing to do without then saying at whose expense are the Lions right. going to turn around. And Zach Berman, who covers the Eagles, legendary Eagles writer, great human being, used to always say that. We'd be in the office together at the Star Ledger and we'd do season predictions for the newspaper. Zach used to cover the Giants and I used to cover the Jets. And Zach used to say, this is an incomplete exercise. Yep. And he would voice his opinion because he'd say, okay, the Giants are going 9-7. Where are those losses? Where are those wins coming from?
That's the problem.
At whose expense are they coming? And he was right.
A lot of people do these predictions as if like, I mean, it turns into like, the league has like a collective winning percentage of 610. Right. It doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? Like,
right. And I love, like, for example, the Saints beat posted there. The Times-Picayune did all the Saints reporters today, right? And every 30-some people who cover the Saints, right? And they all had their predictions. A lot of these people predicting the Saints to go 9-8 or 10-7. Okay. That's great. Like, there's no downside for you doing that, right? I'm the one that's got to, you know, I'm just saying, you know. And I'm the one that's got to.
Their thing is, like, people almost forget that weird stuff happens. Like, there will be massive upsets, and you have to pick some. It's very boring if you just pick the favorite to win every single game. Otherwise, like, what is the point of doing any of this? And then people look at it, and it's like, no way on earth this team's going to beat that team. And it's like, well, that stuff does happen in real life. And if you pick the entire, if you predict everything and you don't have any of those, then like you're just wrong. And so I think predictions, it's fun for me to ride with teams that like I'm higher on than other people, because then it's like, you know, I don't know. It's boring to pick like if the Patriots dynasty, if you had picked the Patriots to win the Super Bowl every single year, you would have been right a bunch of years. But it's fun to pick the teams that you're in on maybe more than other team, more than other people.
The really hard thing is, I mean, in this sport, way more than others, injuries dictate. So you can't predict those. You know what I mean? Like, it's like if I picked the Bengals to win the Super Bowl last year, of course I wouldn't have picked them to win the Super Bowl if I knew Joe Burrow was going to be out. You know what I mean? Like with a wrist injury.
Jake
in October.
Browning catching some shrapnel early in the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's like, so it's such a big factor in the way every NFL season goes. Every team has injuries. Where do you have the injuries? What positions are they to? How much depth do you have at those positions? It's like, I mean, like a lot of those, like that's the hard stuff. You know what I mean? Like, and that's why these things are never going to be an exact science.
All right, let's get into it. We mentioned strange upsets, and I definitely have a one to kick off here, the prediction. By the way, I don't know if anyone notices the jersey. Notre Dame, 1-0.
Yeah, I was actually kind of offended by the jersey. I'm a purist, Connor, and I hate it when my alma mater wears the alternate jerseys. It makes me want to scream when I
really?
See like Ohio State. I hate it. I hate it. Hate it. Hate it. Should always be wearing the classic jerseys. And so like I'm surprised that you, as a lifelong Notre Dame fan, would dare wear whatever that abomination is instead of like the actual blue and gold.
This is
like,
a,
I don't mind the green. The green ones are greens are the green jerseys are fine, but it has to be the classic green jersey. It can't be whatever that is. That like a Shamrock Series jersey?
This is Shamrock Series. This is from Dublin. I want to say like 2018 or 2019. I believe this is a Malik Zaire jersey. I don't think
Notre Dame should never be wearing anything but the classic jerseys. That's why, I hate it about Ohio State. It's what I respect that about Alabama. I respect that about Penn State, right? Like, is that they always wear those jerseys. Yeah. Like, they don't really veer. And
my take is get over yourself. Not you. I'm just saying, like, the,
well,
you know.
I mean, like, look, I can swallow my pride on it if it means that we get, like, some 5-star receiver recruit out of California because he thinks the alternate jerseys are cool. Like, I get it. Like, I'm with it. You know what I mean? Like, I just doesn't mean I have to like it, though.
Like, imagine being like a 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid, and basically, like, you're going to Penn State, and it's like, by the way, you have to dress like Steve Jobs for the next 4 years. You have to wear the same crappy outfit every time. It's just a blue, stripe on a white helmet, and, you know,
no name on the back.
No name on the back. Okay, cool. Yeah, really want to sign up for that. Anyway,
but that's like you basically just described the Notre Dame jersey too, which
fair
again. They look good on Saturday, though. They did look good on Saturday.
1-0, beat Texas A&M, and then we have Brian Kelly down at LSU just slapping the table and knocking his water bottle over and crying over a, you know, it was good. It was good.
Notre Dame needed to get a former Ohio State player in there to lead their revival, so.
Tough opening week for Lehigh football. Tied 7-7 with Army after the first quarter. I thought, oh, we could take down a service academy here. Ended up losing the game 42-7. So not
in their defense, those service academies are tough to prepare for, Mitch.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly. Hung in there for 15 minutes, but then fell off a bit.
The Golden Eagles, Lehigh?
The Mountain Hawks.
Okay, yeah, all right. Some sort of established bird.
Connor, you know this bird.
Wow. Look at that thing. All right. Mountain Hawks, 0-1, but certainly will bounce back. I'll get into my NCAA predictions where I predict every game of the NCAA season, all 900,000 of those. So we'll see how Lehigh ends up doing that one.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, AFC East, real quick, guys. Biggest upset here. I have the Patriots upsetting the Bengals on opening weekend, but then the Bengals crushing it. And because it's just something weird happening here, okay?
Do the Patriots go on to win the AFC East?
They do not. Dead last.
No Jamar Chase in that opener. That just opens it up for New England, is that?
Right? I don't know. You know, and just like, you know, Joe Burrow's coming back. It's just going to take a little bit of time. And then Gerard Mayo throws a little knuckleball at everybody.
See, me and Mitch live here, so we have a pretty good view of how freaking bad the Patriots are going to be.
I think they're going to be pretty bad. I have them going 4-13. But I'm just saying, like we said at the beginning, like there has to be something weird that's going to happen on opening weekend. Right. There has to be just like a weird occurrence. And this is my weird occurrence. That's all.
Patriots almost beat the Eagles on week one afternoon last year. That was a tough game.
So there you go. Buffalo Bills, first place, 10-7. Miami Dolphins, second place, 9-8. Jets, third place, 9-8. New England Patriots, dead last, 4-13, and will be dead last forever after embarrassed me last season and had me lampooned and laughed at. We're going to get to this a little bit later in the show, but my goal was to have the Jets beat the Dolphins in the final week of the season and heroically storm into the playoffs with Aaron Rodgers newly cemented as Secretary of State. And this would have been this great sweeping sort of moment for the country and for the New York Jets. But tiebreakers didn't work out. So the Jets are outside looking in at 9-8. What are your biggest complaints, comments about this?
I think the Jets, like I've made this comment and it struck me when I was there, but you know, like I made this comment a few different places now that I think the Jets are in the same spot that the 2020 Buccaneers were in, where they are good enough around their legendary quarterback where they don't need him to be a hero on a week-to-week basis. And I really think that that's a product of what they've done on the offensive and defensive lines. I don't think we can count on Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses making it through the whole season and playing 17 games, right? But the fact that they brought in those two to stabilize the position and then drafted Olufoshanu, I think was brilliant. You know, so like if one of those guys goes down, they're going to have the 11th pick in the draft trotting out there, you know? And then they've got two guys who played for them last year and played significant snaps to tackle for them last year behind Fashanu. They add John Simpson on the offensive line. They have seven former first-round picks on their defensive line. I mean, I don't know, Connor. Like, they were pretty competitive last year at points with a scarecrow at quarterback. And now you're going to put Rodgers in there, and you have Buffalo, who I think Buffalo's going to get there, but I think early in the year, you know, with the amount of like key pieces they've lost, you know, and I know not all these guys, you know, have been on the field much the last few years, but Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, Mitch Moore, Stephon Diggs, like I trust the Bills system. I trust Josh Allen. I think McDermott's going to get them where they need to go, but I think that could be a team that's like 4-4 in midseason and then turns it on late, you know? So I just look at the Jets as like the team that's out of the box, ready to go. The Dolphins defense is in transition. The Bills roster is in transition. The Patriots are not very good. I just think that it sets up for the Jets to win the division and have a real shot to get to the Super Bowl.
I like it. Mitch, issues with the AFC?
No major quibbles here. Like, I think I disagree a little. I have the Dolphins winning the division, but
ooh,
like, I think looking at your picks, they are absolutely defensible. Three teams within a game, a team with 10 wins, two teams with 9 wins. Like, I agree. I think this is going to be a tight race and close. And, you know, like I don't know how much time we're going to go into each division. Like, we could run through all of our picks in detail. I'm not going to sit here and disagree with you, like, on all 32 teams and split hairs. But I think looking generally at your exercise, I think three teams close, two teams sneaking in, one team barely out. You know, you could put them in any order with those three, and I wouldn't be shocked by that at the end of the season. I think there are some people are picking the Bills to like miss the playoffs is kind of, I'm seeing that as like a, almost like a popular sleeper, but like, I think the Dolphins are good. The Jets are good. The Bills are good. I'm fine with you picking with how that shook out in that order.
I think Buffalo, like the one thing to add on Buffalo is I do think there's a temptation and there's going to be the temptation early on to use Josh Allen as a runner a lot. And generally, like what happens when the Bills do that is he wears down and it creates problems for him as a passer and he gets hurt. And so I think it's going to be on Joe Brady as they're, again, like a bigger role for Khalil Shakir, a bigger role for Dalton Kincaid. How does Dawson Knox fit into all of this? You know, breaking in Keon Coleman. They have all of these new pieces. The temptation is going to be to win games, to use Josh Allen as a runner. And I do think like a swing factor in their season could be how they use Josh Allen early in the year and how careful they are about not overdoing it. Because, of course, the temptation is there to start to use him as a runner more than you should.
Yeah, I'm a bigger Mitch Trubisky fan than you guys, so I'm just kind of rolling with it. No, I agree. I had, and you were right, you said 4-4 to start the season. I had the Bills starting 2-2. You know, you kind of roll through these pockets of heavy losses, and especially in the middle, right when it starts to get cold out, Josh mm-hmm. Allen running a little too much, and then you get the bye week, and you start to be able to get him healthy and kind of back toward a run at the end of the season. That was kind of my thought process there. And I've said it a million times, I think this Jets schedule is just brutal. It's brutal. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how they look that opening weekend against San Francisco. But a lot of traveling early on, not a lot of these complimentary games where they get to stay on the West Coast. Even going to Nashville week two after going to San Francisco week one, and no one
the NFL screwed them. And
big
like
time.
The NFL's line, like they owed us one. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. We've complained about that. I have ranted about that to no end.
I mean, and then they play on Thursday night.
I believe the first time
they play at San Francisco on Monday. That's cross country trip back. So you're getting back at like what? Like 7 a.m. on Tuesday morning, 7 or 8 a.m., right? Maybe later than that. And then you go to Tennessee that following week, which is not a short trip, right? And then you come back and your home opener is on Thursday night. Like, that's a really tough turn.
I agree. That's why I was like, gosh, you know, how can I get them to a winning record to acknowledge the work and the roster, the strength of the roster, while also being like,
yeah,
God, this schedule blows. So that's how I ended up with that. We're going to the AFC North. But by the way, guys, we have some breaking news here on the podcast. The Cleveland Browns have a 20-year partnership for stadium naming rights. Historic Browns Stadium, now going to be called Huntington Bank Field. So it's a super regional bank. I don't know what that means.
No, being a Buckeye, I can remember a lot of my friends had Huntington Bank ATM cards when I was in college. So good for Huntington Bank.
A $196 billion asset regional bank holding company. Mm-hmm. Founded in 1866 with 970 branches in 11 states.
And that news breaks right as we're getting into the AFC North. So yes. There you go.
Perfect time for me to announce that the Browns won. we'll talk about this oddity, right?
Does that carry over then if they go to that stadium they were going to build in the suburbs? Is that?
I was wondering that too. I think Huntington Park is where the Columbus Clippers play.
That's right. That is right. Yep.
Yeah. Look at me bringing some Columbus, AAA. Ohio knowledge to this podcast. Not the role you thought I was going to be in when you.
Columbus Clippers in a big spot. All right. AFC North, Cincinnati Bengals 11-6, Baltimore Ravens 10-7, Pittsburgh Steelers 10-7, Cleveland Browns 9-8. Everybody makes the playoffs.
Wow.
For the first time.
I think you said this last week, though. I think you told me this last week,
first
right?
First time in the history, we went through this. The storied history of the 17 playoff format, that the entire division makes the playoffs. Now, I have a bad track record with this kind of prediction. I believe it was 2 years ago. I thought that the entire AFC West was going to make the playoffs. That was Nathaniel Hackett. Year one in Denver.
That was the year. Yeah, that was the, oh my God, look at the NFC West year.
Yes.
Right?
And it ended up being like, oh my God, look at the AFC West, you know?
Yeah.
You could say it the same way. It's just, you know, or say it
Yeah, again. This is your wildest take of the whole exercise. And what I like about it, again, and you've called me your Steve Kornacki. What I love is that when you submitted this beautiful spreadsheet that I made for you that you fill in every year.
Thank you, by the way.
You didn't even know this. You just sent me the picks and all the records. And then I broke the news to you over the phone, which was fun, calling you to tell you that your AFC East dream of whatever you wanted with the Jets sneaking in or not, or the Dolphins or whatever. I was like, you know, because we always have that option. We could take your picks and we could mess with them at the end and sort of rig it so that you get the outcomes you desired, or we could just go with what happened. And I think what we ended up with was fun enough that we decided to just let it roll because I love this outcome. I don't think it will happen in real life, but I love that this is the outcome you came to organically.
If any division is going to make the playoffs in its entirety, I would say it's got to be the AFC North, right? If you had to pick one division.
I think the other North division... I think the NFC North might have a
fair point
outside shot at that too. And we'll get to them, but I think Chicago is better than they have been, and they got hot at the end of last year. And again, we'll go over this, but I really trust Kevin O'Connell and what he's doing too. But I would say looking at what you have, Connor, I think the Browns are one of the most interesting teams in the league. I'm with you on the Bengals. The Browns made the playoffs last year. I don't know that they got enough credit for what they pulled off last year. To do that with five different quarterbacks, and not only that, but they were down to their fourth and fifth tackles. And then I think what they did with their staff, which they used the Ravens as the model on this. And so if you look at the Ravens over the years, right? So Marty Mornwig was the offensive coordinator Lamar's rookie year. Then they wind up moving on to Greg Roman to build a running game that would work for Lamar. And then they, move on from Roman and go to Todd Monken to build a passing game off that running game. like the Ravens have kind of like prioritized evolution with what they're doing offensively. And that was sort of the idea with what the Browns did with their offensive staff and bringing in Ken Dorsey, who's coached Josh Allen and Cam Newton, has done a lot of shotgun stuff that Deshaun Watson is familiar with and has some background. Brian Daboll, that Patriots offense, that's what Deshaun Watson ran in Houston, right? And then to bring in Andy Dickerson, they didn't want to lose Bill Callahan, obviously, and that's a huge part of the picture last year. But to bring in Andy Dickerson, who has background with Sean McVay, you know, and Shane Waldron in building a run game, I just think there's an interesting like kind of injection of ideas going on and going on there. And they did such a good job of making it work last year. It might not work at all, right? Like, but I know ownership's charge was let's get more out of Deshaun Watson. And then they go to the Baltimore model to try to enact that. Like let's see if we can evolve the offense in a way that's going to make a more comfortable Deshaun Watson. And you see a team last year that, what did they win 11 games? I think that's right, right? 11 games with five different quarterbacks and down to their fifth tackles. If Deshaun Watson doesn't need to be like 2020 Deshaun Watson, if he can be like the 10th best quarterback in the league, like could that be a 12-win team? Maybe, right?
At 11-6, the Browns last year. So I agree. I think the Browns, you know, it's in this exercise played the Browns similar to the way that I played the Jets, where I tried to put my driver back in the bag and hit it down the middle of the fairway because if Deshaun Watson is, I mean, we've been saying this for 3 years, yeah, right?
I'm not saying a top five quarterback again. I'm saying like if he's the 10th best quarterback in the league, if he is 90% of what he was.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just wrapping your head around that idea of how big of an if that is. The same thing with Aaron Rodgers. We have no idea what Aaron Rodgers is going to look like. No idea. Absolutely no idea.
I also think Justin Fields is going to wind up being the quarterback of the Steelers like a month or two into the season. So
I'm on the record with that as well. All right, Mitch, any complaints for the AFC North outside of the fact that you had to do a lot of work on this division?
No complaints. I think I would have shifted things down a little. I think getting the Steelers to 10 and the Browns to 9 is a tall order. I see that you did it, but I think I still look at this division. I've got the Bengals and Ravens running 1-2 in some order, and I just think, you know, one
Who's
of these
three?
Teams is going to fall. You know, I didn't have to pick a three. I only had to pick my seven playoff teams. Nobody asked me to pick a third place in the AFC North. No, I think I would probably go Pittsburgh 3. I agree it's going to be Justin Fields for most of the season. And I just trust. I think sometimes when you have a team that has a run like the Browns had last year, like sometimes you look at that and it's like, oh, this is an organization that's on their way up and look how good they are. And sometimes it's like the next year the duct tape falls off and you're like, oh, it's impossible to do that again a second year in a row. Like that's like the hardest part of the offseason is figuring out like which of the teams are like actually trending up and which of the teams are like kind of hit their ceiling and are due for some regression.
Speaking of which, we have the AFC South, and this is my favorite division based on just the results and how I had them finishing. So I have Texans at 9-8, first place, Colts at 9-8, second place, Jaguars at 7-10, Tennessee Titans 6-11. Got some heat for the Titans. Everyone seems to think that Brian Callahan's going to do a great job here. My only question is, like, again, when you do an exercise like this, at whose expense are the Titans going to win 7 or 8 or 9 games? I don't know. And maybe like there's a world where Will Levis is fun and he balls out and there are games where he throws 4 touchdown passes and runs for another one. I can totally see that. But I just have a hard time leaning on teams that needed to do as much work in veteran free agency as the Titans did with Pollard, with Calvin Ridley. You're depending on a lot of older guys, and Brian Callahan can coach the older players, but are those players going to be there when you need them in November, in December? Are they going to be good enough to win what could be a dogfight of a division? I mean, this is going to be tough. All four of these teams could legitimately win this division.
Yeah, you were pretty kind at the bottom of the standings. Like I'm looking now, you have 2 teams that went 4-13, and then 1 team that went 5-12, And then you've got every other team with at least 6 wins. So to that point of like, where do they come from? You know, it's hard. Like realistically, there's probably going to be a team that goes 2-15 or, you know, a 3-14. Like there's always a team like that. And again, maybe it's a team that has an injury that we're not seeing now. But like, it's hard. People want to be optimistic about every single team. I think that's actually, ironically, that's what you wrote about in your power rankings today, is that everybody wants to be high on every team going into the season. But some of these teams are just going to fall below expectations. So I have no problem with you saying it'll be the Titans.
Albert, make sense of the AFC South for me.
I mean, so I'm with you on the Colts and the Texans. What I really love about where the Texans are is, so I have this, like list of rules. Like I did a story probably 10, 15 years ago. Really smart editor. Shout out Dom Bonavasuto, who was my editor at NFL.com and then later at SI. He asked me to do a story on free agency rules and like rules that teams use to govern what they do in free agency. And one of the things that I was able to dig up from teams is what I wound up calling the Alvin Harper rule. Are you guys too young to be familiar with the example of Alvin Harper? Am I dating myself here, Connor?
Is this going to be your Ask the Boomer segment this week, Albert?
It might be. Yeah. So
I remember Alvin Harper growing up on NFC East football. This is in my wheelhouse from me at that age.
Okay. So the Alvin Harper rule is basically don't sign someone's number two, pay him to be a number one, and then think he's going to be a number one. And it was Alvin Harper, who was an incredible number two in Dallas, playing opposite Michael Irvin. The Buccaneers paid him what was a lot of money at the time. It's probably like minimum salary now. I think it was in 94. And the idea was he was going to be the Bucs' number one receiver. It didn't wind up working out. And there are lots of examples in free agency of taking somebody else's number two, projecting him to be your number one, and it not working out, right? So what I really love about what the Texans did this offseason is they took two guys. Well, really, if you look at it, three guys who are someone else's number one. Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, and Joe Mixon. Those guys were not complementary parts. And so you're taking Stephon Diggs and you're putting him in a receiver group with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. And this is a guy who's been the number one, right? And you're letting Jonathan Greenard go opposite Will Anderson, but you're bringing in somebody else's number one pass rusher who's been seeing the attention of other teams for his entire career, and Danielle Hunter. And you're putting Joe Mixon back in the backfield as who's been a number one, who's been a bell cow, right? And with all of these guys, you're asking a little less of them than their previous teams were. So you're giving them a better chance to thrive. And so I thought like the Texans offseason was really well conceived from that standpoint. I think Stroud, I'm not being a homer here, is legitimately a star. You know, and I think most of the NFL sees it that way. I also, like, people forget how close the Colts were to making the playoffs.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, with freaking Gardner Minshew a quarterback.
The Colts outscored the Texans last year.
The only thing that scares me about it though, Connor, is can Anthony Richardson stay healthy?
And I've heard that. I've heard people say
because it's not just like this is happened once. Like this has happened like since he was in high school, you know? And it's like a harsh reality sometimes is guys have a hard time staying. Like certain guys just, I mean, I guess I could have applied that to Burrow too, and I picked him to win MVP, so maybe there'll be egg on my face here too. But like, you know, like there are certain guys who just can't stay healthy. And like, that's what I worry about with Richardson. And if you have to be careful with him, are you going to get the most out of him? Like if you have to be really careful about the way you run him, are you going to be able to maximize who he is as a player? That's like my question. But I love Steichen as a coach. I think one of the reasons Jalen Hurts wasn't last year what he was in 2022 is because they lost Shane Steichen in Philadelphia. So I'm with you. Like I think that the Colts, if Richardson stays healthy, are a very real threat to the Texans. I think for the first time in forever, however long, like the AFC South has a chance to get two teams in the playoffs.
I'm down on the Jaguars. I can't get them there. I can't get
it's
them
hard.
There.
It's and you know what? I was so high on them last year. I try to remind myself that. I think Tennessee is rebuilding in so many different spots. Like they've had so many guys that were so important there for so long. Derrick Henry, Taylor Lewan, Kevin Byard that aged out. And I think they're sort of like where the Bears were, with Justin Fields, where right now, like, part of it is we're rebuilding our roster and we're trying to figure out if our young quarterback is the guy. And I give them credit for this. Like, they went and got Calvin Ridley and they got Tony Pollard and they signed, you know, Lloyd Cushenberry to be their center. Like, they're putting things around. They drafted J.C. Latham. They're putting things around Levis so they can get an answer on him. But I do think that they're in the midst of a pretty extensive rebuild. So I don't mind where you have them.
Mitch, any glaring complaints about the AFC South?
I'm a little higher on the Jaguars than you guys. I can't quit them. I had them in the Super Bowl last year, and so I was feeling good when they were sitting at 8-3. And I have them as a little bit of a bounce back. But no, I think you're right around consensus here. I will say 9-8, you are probably lower than most people think on the Texans. Like, I don't know what their win total over under is, but it's probably above 9.
I think it's 9.5, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and listen, stuff like this happens. The AFC South is also just like one of the weirdest divisions in football, where like every year it's like you can just like, you know, shake up those four teams and spit them out in any order. And like, it's just like always a bizarre division. But I think this is mostly fine. I think I've said that about most of your divisions. I don't think you had any egregious takes here.
There's no history in the division is part of the problem. The Texans came into the league in 2002. The Titans moved to Tennessee in the 90s. The Colts are the most historic team, but even they were product of a move in the 80s. And then, who am I missing?
The Jaguars
also new. Will,
Jaguars are, yeah, an expansion team too.
Will soon be in San Antonio. So,
Like if you dropped somebody from 1990 and showed into 2024 and showed them the AFC South, they'd be like, what is this?
It would look like, did you ever play, it was for like Nintendo or maybe it was Sega. And it was like a monster alien football league, and you played on like different planets and terrains.
I mean, that sounds like NFL Blitz, but not really.
It wasn't Blitz. It was like a precursor to Blitz. They would have thought it was probably.
I sort of remember something like that. Yeah,
I gotta look it up
because they had like basketball. Well, there's the basketball game. You remember Arch Rivals?
Of course,
I don't remember this.
That was the one you could punch. You could just punch the guys. Yeah. And take the ball from them.
There were so many bad examples set for us back then. Like, I mean, we brought this up on the podcast before, Connor, Mitch. I don't know if you are a party to this one, but in Blades of Steel, the old hockey game from the 80s, if there was fighting and when you fought, it was like the power meters went up, like you were playing Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. And if you won the fight, you didn't go to the penalty box.
There's a bunch of kids showing up for the first day of hockey practice. Like, yeah, this is how this works. I just have to, absolutely bludgeon my opponent, hit him in the nose. The AFC West. I mean, listen, guys, this isn't rocket science. The Chiefs are winning 11 games. The Chargers second at 9-8. The Raiders third at 6-11. Broncos fourth at 5-12. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's saying you're crushing the Broncos. I'm not crushing the Broncos. I actually have Bo Nix doing really well down the stretch. What is this? I have him going 4-3 over his final seven, you know, to signify that he's getting better. But look, this team's eating $90 million over 2 years in dead cap. They
basically stripped themselves of having the rookie quarterback or the rookie quarterback contract.
They don't have any advantage on that front. Right. The Raiders, I just feel like I feel like Gardner Minshew could be surprisingly good for Devontae Adams, you know, and I have them winning a couple surprise games where they just bang some great team in a big spot for no apparent reason on like a Thursday night, you know, that's going to be, I think, their MO. I think Antonio Pierce will get them fired up for some big games, but I mean, are we going to sit here today and say that we love this team to the point where, you know, they're going to win 8, 9, 10 games? I don't know. And I think the Chargers, my thought process is Jim Harbaugh will get them part of the way there. But I don't think anyone is talking about what a bad spot this roster was left in. Like, this roster is in the middle.
You had a few, like, star players that are there,
and we fell into that trap every year with the Chargers. It was like, well, they have Khalil Mack and they have Justin Herbert and they have all these great and Keenan Allen, so, but like, why aren't they winning? Because the roster, the middle of that roster, is hollow. It's Cadbury Egg hollow. We don't need them.
They're,
right?
Yeah, they're not hollow.
What are the hollow Easter? Cadbury makes a hollow one too, don't they?
No, I don't think
Cadbury's
so.
I would be cream?
Very well, disappointed I know, like, if I bit into a Cadbury egg and it was hollow in the middle. Yeah,
I feel like the Christmas chocolate is the chocolate that's hollow in the middle.
Maybe.
Right? Like the Christmas chocolate's the one where it's always the figure and the foil and you take the foil off and then it's hollow in the middle. Whereas like the Easter chocolate usually has something in the middle.
Okay.
I think that's right.
That's fair.
I don't think we have to waste much time on the Chiefs.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, like, yeah, they're going to be all right.
they're going to be in the AFC Championship game. Whether they make it past that, we'll see. But I don't think that there's much argument on where the Chiefs are and who they're going to be. I think the Chargers are the proverbial tough out. You know, like I think they're going to be somewhere in the 7-10 win range. I don't see Jim Harbaugh coaching a bad team. Like I think it's. They've invested in the offensive line, which is a big deal. Are they going to be able to keep their backs healthy is a fair question. You know, so like, what is this going to be with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, who've had their issues staying healthy? Ultimately, I think they get more out of Justin Herbert by asking less of him. Like, that's always been the magic of Jim Harbaugh, is he gets more out of his quarterbacks by asking less of them. Everywhere he's gone, he's gotten really good, efficient play out of his quarterbacks, in large part for that reason, because he really does ask for a total team game, which has the quarterback as a part and not as the guy who everything swings on. So I think they're right there in the middle of the pack. The Broncos, so I'm with you, Connor. I think the Broncos are the team that, like, so the ghost of Russell Wilson is haunting them still. But, like, I think there's a team that, like, we could be looking at going into 25 and saying, God, they got hot at the end of the year.
Right.
Like, are they going to win 9 or 10 games this year? Like, I think they're the team that, like, could turn 1-7 into 7-10 or something like that.
Exactly.
And, like, I think the reason why, they love their rookie class. Like, they love their rookie class. They think that they really hit on a bunch of guys there. I mean, when I talked to Sean Payton about it, he compared it to the 06 and 17 classes he had in New Orleans, which were, I mean, incredible. The 17 class had Ryan Ramczyk, Marshawn Lattimore, Alvin Kamara, Marcus Williams, Alex Anzalone, Trey Hendrickson, and I'm missing one there, but all those guys are still in the league. So, like, I think the Broncos are a team that ascends. I think the Raiders could have the first pick in the draft.
Ooh.
Yeah, I just don't think right now. I don't know what they hang their hat on right now, you know?
Gardner Minshew, baby.
Yeah.
That's it. Connor, do you even know how close you were to putting the Chargers in the playoffs?
So this is where I want to bring in Mitch Kornacki. So the way that this breaks down, we have the AFC playoffs as Bengals 11-6, 1 seed, Chiefs 11-6, 2 seed, Bills 10-7, 3 seed, Texans 9-8, 4 seed, 5 seed is the Steelers at 10-7, 6 seed of the Ravens at 10-7. And in the 7th seed, we had a 5-way tie between the Dolphins, the Jets, the Browns, the Colts, and the Chargers, all at 9-8. How on earth did you do this?
Okay. Well, first, let's start at the top. So you mentioned Bengals and Chiefs tied at 11-6. They play each other this year. And so because you had the Bengals beating the Chiefs in week 2, that is why the Bengals get the 1 seed in your hypothetical scenario. So that's why Bengals 1, Chiefs 2, Bills 3 seed, Texans 4. And then you had the Steelers and Ravens. Again, you're high on that AFC North. They were tied at 10-7. And the Steelers actually swept the season series in this scenario, which is how they both got to 10. So that's why I gave the Steelers the 5 and the Ravens the 6. So you mentioned 5 teams tied for the 7th seed. Connor, do you know what the first step is when 5 teams are tied? Do you know the first thing to do to look at?
No, that's why I have you.
Albert, do you know how you break that?
The first step in a 5-way tie?
Yeah.
Would be conference record.
Oh, so wrong, Albert. Amateur hour over here. The first thing you do is you actually decide who finished in what place. You settle the division standings first. So that was why the Jets were out, because I had to first decide who between the Dolphins and Jets finished in 2nd place in the AFC East.
Okay.
So these 2 teams, Connor, you had them splitting the season series. So then we go to division record. You had them both 2-2 in their other division games. So then I had to go to their 3rd tiebreaker between the Dolphins and Jets, which was record in common games. So I was looking at how they did against the NFC West and against the AFC South. And
Connor, you monster.
I know. In that scenario, the Dolphins were one game better than the Jets. So I plucked the Jets out of that five-way tie, and then we were left with four teams still
now
tied.
Now it goes to conference record.
Seven. Well, first we look for any
if the
like,
president
head-to-head.
Dies, then it's the vice president, then it's first, the speaker of the house. And no, go ahead.
First, we had to look for any like head-to-head sweeps, like if they all played each other, if there was anyone that beat all of the other teams or lost all the other teams. But that did not happen between the Dolphins, Browns, Colts, and Chargers.
Wouldn't they all have to play each other? And like, if they don't all play each other, then it's just because they're not completely right.
They didn't all play each other, so there weren't any. There weren't any sweeps because they didn't play each other. So then I went to conference record. And the Browns and Chargers were both one game up on the Dolphins and Colts. So say goodbye to the Dolphins and Colts. And then we're down to the Browns and Chargers for the 7 seed. And they actually play each other in week 9. So circle it on your calendars now, everyone listening to this.
Wow.
Browns, Chargers, week 9 might be the most important game of the entire season. I will set a calendar reminder to check in
and
with
you
before this game. But you had the Browns beating the Chargers in week 9. I'm not sure where is this game. I didn't look that up. But that was the game. That was the one that changed the whole season. And so you've got the Browns getting a 7 seed. And then I don't know. I guess for like draft pick position for the Jets, if they remain eliminated once we're into those, now it's 4 teams tied out of the playoff race. But anyway, that's how
I'll
you
help
get
Connor. I'll help Connor out here. November 3rd in Cleveland could be a tough go for a team from Los Angeles if there's some unseasonable cold weather in Cleveland on November 3rd.
Yeah, a team coming into Huntington Bank Stadium with everything on
Huntington
the line.
Bank Field.
Huntington Bank Field.
And let me tell you something. Yeah. Jameis Winston is built to win these kind of cold weather games. So, all right, let's... Mitch, I don't know, Shelby, if we can add a round of applause sound effect here. Oh. This was just unbelievable. Just when we talk about answering the call and stepping up your game, this was a truly unfair thing that I did to you and to your family, and that you had time that you needed to spend away from the things that you truly care about to do this. And so
listen,
it was beautiful.
NFL tiebreaker procedures are the things that I truly care about. This is doing this over the summer. This is fun for me.
It was a hot July afternoon and you're just like, God almighty.
This was, I don't know if this was as fun as, I think it was 2 years ago when you wanted the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. And I had to call and tell you that they were like the odd man out in a 3-team tiebreaker where you had them actually missing the playoffs. And then you did go back and change the outcome of some games. And this time I told you, as I said at the top of the show, like this was too good. We had to just keep it in place.
I know.
But 2 years ago, you hated the tiebreaker so much you went back and tinkered.
Couldn't you see it though? Like, do you remember in the Friday Night Lights, the movie where they had to meet at the gas station and flip the coin because of how ridiculous the tiebreaker procedures were? Wouldn't that be, that's like the next step for the NFL, right? Is a sponsored night reveal of a 5-way playoff tiebreaker, right?
I think there is a coin toss somewhere in the tiebreaker procedures, but I think you go to like point differential and all kinds of yard. I don't know, but you get to like a million crazy tiebreakers before you get to a coin toss.
That's amazing. All right, we're gonna breeze through the NFC here. Not as controversial. Still a 3-way tiebreaker for Mitch to break in the bottom of the playoffs there. Lions 12-5. Packers 12-5, so maybe a little bit of a surprise there, but I really like the Packers. We have the Bears at 9-8 and the Vikings at 7-10. I think we all agree here. We really like the NFC North. I would have liked to have gotten the Vikings maybe one or two more wins. Mm-hmm. I think Sam Darnold is going to have a Baker Mayfield-esque kind of rebound season there and get himself into a long-term starting role for 2025. Any egregious complaints there?
Well, I'll just say this is another crucial season sweep because you had the Lions and Packers tied at 12-5, and you had the Lions winning both games against Green Bay, which in this case is the difference between the 1 seed and the 5 seed and going on the road in the first round. So that is huge. So was that your thinking? I mean, comparing the Lions to the Packers directly, you think the Lions are that much better, like the season sweep, or is that just how, like, what were the reasons that shook out that way?
Just two hard-fought games. I liked where they fell on the schedule for the rhythm of both of these teams. It felt right. It felt like down the fairway. But yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be our ascension division. It will be the equivalent of the AFC North. I think we will look at this over the next 2 or 3 years as arguably the best division in football once the Vikings come around and they get that long-term answer at quarterback too. It's J.J. McCarthy, as much as it pains Albert probably to say, it looked pretty
sharp. No, he looked great. He looked great. Like, I think, you know, and I really, as much as anything, I trust what they've got there. You know what I mean? Like, I think O'Connell's going to do a good job. He was going to be disciplined. Just as far as recognizing the right time to put him in, to throw him in there into the mix. And, you know, obviously now that's forced with the injury. I thought this was fascinating too, by the way. You guys know that chart I keep, right? Like, of all the starts.
Yes.
And Mitch, you might have seen this in this. Like, I put it in as a note in one of the stories. Did you guys realize that this is the first time this millennium that a first round quarterback has been lost for the season before the start of the year? Never happened.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
I read it in your piece earlier this week. And I will say, and Albert, I'm very familiar with your chart because I think this has to be the year that you change the font size and just split it into two pages.
Because I keep making it smaller and smaller,
and it's brutal. And it is impossible to read. This has to be the year you have to split this year.
I think I will that is noted, Mitch. I will consider that because we are at the point where the font size hold on. I'm going to pull it up and I'm going to give you the actual font size.
While you're doing this, for those who are new here, Albert keeps a chart of when each rookie quarterback starts, makes his first start with the backing reason being that every team says they're going to be patient with their quarterbacks and they're not.
Right.
It's very important. Once a year, I think about Jake Locker, and it's because Albert is out here trotting out his new updated facts.
There are only three true red shirts, right? Even with Mahomes, we're cheating it a little bit, but three true. So over the last 16 draft cycles, 48 quarterbacks in the first round, three true red shirts. Mahomes, which is cheating it a little bit because he did start a game at the end of the year. Jordan Love and Jake Locker. And I think I had it in there right that like Jordan Love's like the only guy in that stretch that didn't play a snap as a rookie. I think that's right.
Sounds right. At least it's close. Yeah.
Ooh, fun trivia question. Who started instead of Jake Locker that year?
I know that. But I won't answer
hold on,
it because
hold
yeah.
on, hold on.
2011. Do you know it, Mitch?
I read it in your column this week. So
was it Kerry Collins?
Nope. Thanks for reading, Connor.
Oh. Sorry, Albert. Matt Hasselbeck.
No, it's all good.
Matt Hasselbeck.
We all got a lot going on. But yeah, Matt. But that's the thing is, like, I think one thing that's instructive that, and I did point this out in the column, is that like in those three cases, all three of those teams were contending till the very end of the year. Like all those teams were in the playoff race till the end of the year. And those three teams had established veteran quarterbacks and not like bridge guys, like guys who like were multi-year starters in the NFL in Hasselbeck, Alex Smith, and Aaron Rodgers.
All right.
So unless you have those two elements, chances are you're going to throw the rookie out there at some point. And the chart actually shows the turn to how it happened in 2008 when Flacco and Ryan were rookies.
Joe Flacco, another quarterback who's going to have a big, big role in the 2024 NFL season. Possibly. NFC East, mm-hmm. Tough one. Philadelphia Eagles 10-7, Dallas Cowboys 9-8, Giants 8-9, Commanders 6-11. I think my biggest probably weak spot here is hammering the Cowboys. They got CeeDee Lamb back, which wasn't the case when I made these predictions. I mean, I built in the fact that obviously they were going to have CeeDee Lamb. I had the Cowboys starting hot and then trailing a little bit down the stretch. The opposite for the Eagles winning four of their last five, which I think would be important for Mitch mm-hmm. and make Mitch happy. I have faith in this coaching staff. I think Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore are going to gel. I don't think Nick Sirianni was a one-year wonder. My one big Eagles controversy here is I think that they would come out of this year maybe less certain, not necessarily about the coach, but about the quarterback. I think this is all on Jalen. this year. And we'll see if he can play ball in this offense. That is, again, kind of going back to what they were trying to do for him for Shane Steichen. This is a familiar quarterback trope, but the better that you get and the more you get the contract, the more control you want over the offense. But some of these quarterbacks do fail to recognize that there's a reason that these offenses are kind of built in the way that they were in the first place. And so we'll see if Jalen kind of, you know, can find that sweet spot in the middle of the stream between those two things pulling him. I think if he does, I think they're going to be fine. A lot of questions on the defense. However, still a really good offensive line. I think they're going to win at the line of scrimmage, and we'll see what happens when this this defense comes around. One fun schedule wrinkle, they play the Ravens at the end of the year, toward the end of the year, and that entire Eagles starting defense is going to be basically like Georgia Bulldogs. And Todd Monken was the offensive coordinator of that team.
So
I have the Ravens winning that game because you know,
Todd Monken knows those guys too
inside
well.
Inside and out, right? That's going to be a fun game. But anyway, continue. Rip me apart.
Yeah, I put both the Cowboys and the Eagles in the category of they've got a lot going on.
Right.
And there's a lot of, like, variables. And, you know, the Cowboys, it's obviously kind of where that whole thing is after, like, a kind of, like, and I know that the circus never leaves town in Dallas, but there were a couple of extra big tops, I would say, at Cowboys camp this summer.
Extra big tops and less fans.
Yeah, it's so they've got a lot going on, and managing that's going to be a challenge for Mike McCarthy, who, by the way, is also in a contract year. And so how does that all look with Dak in the contract year, with Micah Parsons playing for a contract? Obviously, now we know CD's in, but he missed all of camp. It's just there's a lot to manage and a lot going on. They've got a new defensive coordinator in Mike Zimmer. How does that fit into everything? And I think Zim's one of the best defensive minds in football, but, you know, obviously there's some change that's happening on that side now too. And the Eagles is just, there's the question about Nick Sirianni's job security. There's the question about Jalen Hurts' performance and how much it was tied to, you know, the way it was set up with Shane Steichen. You've got two new coordinators. You know, I trust the Eagles more just because
right. If you had to flip a coin,
I just trust them more.
Yes.
Yeah. I just trust them more. Like, I just think with what they've got along the lines of scrimmage, and it's amazing too, because if you think about it, they lost two iconic players, right? Like, I mean, Mitch, you can speak to this. Like, what Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox meant there over the last decade, to be able to pull two guys like that out of the equation. And on the interior of your offensive line, you've still got Cam Jurgens and Landon Dickerson and, you know, Mekhi Becton. We'll see what happens, but he's coming in, and you've got a couple other options there. And then on the D-line, you've got Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis. And it's just, I mean, depth could sting them in those spots, but, like, the way they've been able to prepare to lose guys like this, I think is really impressive. And it's just where the identity of the team's always been. And so could I see them, like, do I think they're a Super Bowl team? Maybe not. But it's hard for me to see a team that's, like, built that way to really kind of fall to pieces. Whereas with Dallas, you could see it happening. It's a little easier to see it happening with Dallas.
Take all of your fancy and smart analysis and throw it out the window. We all know the stat. No repeat winners in the NFC East in, like, 20 plus years.
True.
So the Cowboys can't win it. It's just that's the law of nature. The NFC East turns over every year. So I will say I'm going to spoil a little fun stat from our staff picks. So and you've alluded to it. I don't know if we've come out and said it directly. I am an Eagles fan. I have the Eagles losing a home playoff game this season, which is just a thing that happens sometimes. And then I was looking through the rest of our staff picks. There are 9 of us who made picks, and I think, like, 6 or 7 people have the Eagles losing a home playoff game, which is just very funny.
Oh, is that right?
And so you talk about, like, a coach on the hot seat, and not a coach where it's like, you know, they're never in the playoffs, but a guy where they're expecting, like, you're supposed to get to the playoffs and your job's to advance in the playoffs, or else we'll think about your future here. If the Eagles, like, win the division and then lose an NFC title game at home or lose in the divisional round at home, it'll be very funny to see, you know, what the decisions are like after that kind of season. But it all depends on not just the results, but how they get there. But anyway, that's our consensus MMQB take, is the Eagles will win the division and then lose a home playoff game in whatever round.
I think that's enough. The Eagles could be the one team to make the playoffs and then, like, change coach and quarterback in the offseason. That would be their MO. The NFC South, subject to much speculation. last year. Now we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning the division. Surprise, 9-8. 8-9 for the New Orleans Saints in second place. 8-9 for the
Let me just stop Connor there. I actually read a headline. I think it was Joe Bucks fan that Connor Orr picked Tampa to win the division.
And guess what?
Which kind of explains what big news this was down there.
And guess what? Enjoy it. Because you know what? The year that the Carolina Panthers made the Super Bowl, I didn't pick them for like the first two or three games of the season. And then they all got on me about this keep pounding stuff. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to pick them to lose every week in the season just because I want to show them that I'm not afraid of doing it. And so I picked them to lose 16 weeks in the NFL season, then they went 15-1, and then they made the playoffs, and then they're like, oh, well, is he going to pick us to win the Super Bowl? Is he going to pick us to win the Super Bowl? Yeah, and I picked them to win the Super Bowl over the Broncos by 20 points, and God rest his soul, Gil Brandt came up to me, and we both worked at NFL Network at the time, and he said, Connor, that prediction is out of bounds, and he's like, there is no way that game is going to be nearly that high scoring, and there's no way that the Panthers are going to win that game. He's like, I promise you the Broncos are going to win it. It's going to be a tight defensive matchup. Clearly, Gil Brandt knew a little bit more about football than I did. So you have it. Enjoy it, Bucks fans. I'm saying you're going to win the division for the fourth year in a row, despite the fact that you're replacing your offensive coordinator. There you go. You go ahead and you do with it what you want. I believe in you. Okay? That's it. That's all we're going to say about it. I sneakily think it would be fun to have like the Saints or the Falcons win it, but this is how it came out. This is how the algorithm came out, basically blindfolded. Was not influenced by the fact that I was chased down by the GM last year. Yeah, had to go to the principal's office. But
I said you're a man of principle, not that you had to go to the principal's office. But maybe that too.
Both of those things are true. Freudian yeah. thought there. But yeah, I don't know. Tell me where I'm wrong. Legitimately, three teams could win this division, and it's going to come down to one or two divisional games.
I mean, I think like you know the Baker Mayfield story and what Baker Mayfield is now. I really like that part of it. I think, you know, again, the way that they've invested in the lines of scrimmage is a good tell that this is going to be a team that's going to be in every game. And they've drafted really well, you know, like I think it's remarkable, like how they've turned the roster over where they were this aging roster around Tom Brady. It's like, how many old guys do they have left? Mike Evans, like Lavonte David, and that's it. I mean, for the most part, and Vita Vea is a little older. Chris Godwin's a little older, but I mean, for the most part, they've effectively turned over their roster and they're still, you know, a playoff team. So, like, I think they're ascending in some key spots. They've got some good young players they're excited about. I got to look up what college he's from. The guy's name, kid's name is Cam Johnson. He's from a school that, I'm not even kidding about this, didn't have football until like 2019. Hold on. I think they started their football. Yeah, Cameron Johnson. So he is from Barton College, and he made the team as everybody there said he would. And yeah, he went to Barton College in North Carolina, which did not have football until. And I'm going to look this up for you. Hold on.
If you pull up Barton College. On Google Maps, you just get a picture of an apartment building. No offense to Barton.
Yes, so they just resumed football after 70 years away. They dropped football after the 1950 season when somebody named Bill Crutchfield was their coach.
Hell yeah.
So they started football in 2020. And so that's where this kid's coming from. So my point is they've been able to find some guys like Bucky Irving out of Oregon. They draft him to play running back. Like they've been able to effectively find a bunch of guys in different places and everything else and make themselves a lot younger as a team. I really like where they're at.
Where would you set the line on Lehigh versus Barton in a game here?
I think Lehigh would beat them, right? I mean, it's a Division II team, so
I'd hope so.
I don't know. I'd be disappointed in Lehigh if they didn't beat Barton.
Been a tough few years over at Lehigh. And Connor, before we move on from the NFC South, I just want to say Saints, Falcons, both 8-9, irrelevant to the playoff picture. I broke the tie for you anyway. came down to the third tiebreaker. They split the season series. They had the same division record. The Saints were one game better in common opponents, which came down to how they did against the AFC West. A three-way tie with the Bucs, Saints, and Falcons all at 8-9 with an under 500 division winner would have been more fun from you. But yes. I know that you're on your own little journey with the Bucs, and you had to make them a 9-8 division champ. But there you go. Bucs first, Saints second, Falcons third, Panthers last.
All right. NFC West, Rams 11-6, 49ers 10-7, Cardinals 9-8. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Surprise pick, and then the Seahawks at 6-11. Seahawks are going to make me look the worst out of any team on this entire exercise. Actually, I guarantee that the Seahawks will make me look dumber than any other team. This team is loaded.
So that's the one. That's the one that you have a knot in your stomach over.
Yes, I have a knot in my stomach over the Seahawks.
I don't blame you. I think that division. Honestly, I think that division. You know, like I
that
think
could be a division where four teams get in.
I really believe that. Here's the reason why. So we know how good the Rams and the Niners are, right? So we don't even, again, like, we don't need to waste a ton of time talking about how good they are.
Cardinals are going to be spicy, man.
So, like, the Seahawks and the Cardinals, the Seahawks is their second and third year guys, and the Cardinals is their first and second year guys. The amount of players that those two teams have on rookie contracts that are going to be playing key roles that they think are going to be really good. And it's not just like for the Cardinals, it's not just like Marvin Harrison and Paris Johnson, right? It's Max Melton. You know, it's Michael Wilson. It's like guys that they think can be key guys for them that they got on day two. And the Seahawks, like, it's just Charles Cross, Abe Lucas, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Devin Witherspoon. Like, you look at this is like the Russell Wilson haul for them,
yeah,
right? Like what they were able to do the last two drafts before this one and how many snaps those guys played as rookies and in the case of the 22 draft guys, second year players. It's hard for me to look at the Seahawks and not say like, that's still an ascending team. And I think Geno's better than people think too.
I do too. That's going to be the one. And luckily the Seahawks have a great fan base. They're gonna lampoon me in the right way and destroy me in the right way. I'm already preparing to get hit by the steamroller truck on that one. But it is what it is. It's like, where are these other losses coming from? Like, maybe I thought in the NFC, like, okay, maybe I could yank the Saints down a couple of games, but I kind of like that veteran defense and I think that they might be okay. They might be able to bang around. Could I have sucked two more wins away from the Panthers? Possibly. You know, is anybody really going to bat an eye if I have them at two wins instead of
four
wins?
Who's the worst team?
I have the Patriots.
Patriots and Panthers, you have both at 4-13.
Okay, so that's interesting because what does that mean then if there's a quarterback there, whether it's Carson, Beck or Shedeur Sanders or Quinn Ewers, whoever it is, you know, I don't think the Patriots won't know enough with Drake May yet to do it. Could that, like, could Carolina be in an interesting spot where they've got a decision to make after this year?
I know. Just saying. You know? I mean, are we really, and I wrote this in the Panthers.
And blurb. Will someone get their hat taken off in the process?
Hat.
Or drink thrown on them.
Removal. Yeah. Well, always a risk if you're sitting near David Tepper. There's no doubt. Yeah, I mean, I wrote this in the blurb. I thought that the Panthers could have, you know, like a spicy Cardinals season where you win four games, but you're in a lot of the games,
but
right?
You
look good. So I don't know. We'll see.
I do think like Dave Canales like will bring a good vibe there, which is that's actually like, you know, normally like a lot of that stuff can be BS, but I think in that specific place it's important there after the couple of years they've been through.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mitch, you did some work here on the tie-breaking front in the NFC playoffs. Lions 1 seed 12-5, Rams 2 seed 11-6, Eagles 3 seed 10-7, Bucks 4 seed 9-8, Packers 5 seed 12-5, Niners 6 seed 10-7, Cowboys, Bears, Cardinals all tied at 9-8, with the Bears sneaking in.
Yeah, you made it easy on me until that end there, because you had teams with just cascading records that were all different and separated by a game, nice and clean. So the Bears, Cowboys, Cardinals, We went to conference record, and the Bears were one game clear of Dallas and Arizona. And so they sneak in there as the 7 seed at 9-8, which I think you were happy to see that that was your outcome.
I did want the Bears to sneak in Caleb's rookie year. And I had...
So you've got three... You talked earlier about how the NFC West is a type of division that could have four teams get in. The reason it's hard is just because the Packers and Lions, both in the NFC North, it's hard to leave one of those teams out of the playoffs this year. But you've actually got the NFC North as a division with three playoff teams now, thanks to Chicago getting in.
I think the Packers are going to be really good. Like, I think the Packers... Like, I think what they're going to get on defense with Jeff Hafley as the defensive coordinator and having some of those guys unleashed up front, and Rashawn Gary and Devontae Wyatt, and, you know, obviously Kenny Clark's been there forever. And then the fact that the young guys are kind of growing up with Jordan Love there, you know, from, you know, Romeo Doubs to Christian Watson to Dontavian Wicks to Luke Musgrave to Jaden Reed. Like, they've got a lot of young guys that are sort of coming up together with Jordan Love, you know? And then the job Matt LaFleur's done there. I mean, I had him as my coach of the year. I think he's, like, criminally underrated for the job he's done. Like, across the board. In managing the Rodgers mess at the end, in developing Love, all of that different stuff.
No arguments here. I think that that's the way to go. All right, before we go, give me one thing you guys are looking forward to. Like, legitimately, we're here, for real. We never stopped talking about the NFL, yeah. But games are actually starting now. And I'm prepared to lose a couple games off my 272 this weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be perfect, but anyway, let me know. What is the one thing you are looking forward to? Let's start with Mitch. Give me the one thing you're looking forward to 2024-25 NFL season.
I think, and thanks for this sprung on me, didn't know I'd be answering this question today. I think the backup quarterbacks last year, that was like such a ridiculous storyline. And I know it happens every year, but it feels like last year was like, we were particularly hard hit. Maybe it's that some of the backups were just like fun, where it was like Tommy DeVito and Tyson Bagent and Jake Browning, like these Joshua Dobbs, they became like main characters of the season.
Yes.
And that was like a fun, they all had their like one or two weeks where they were like the person everyone was talking about. And that was fun. But I also think like, it's just nice to have the quarterbacks back and healthy. And so I do mm-hmm. think we watched a lot of bad football and like weird games and storylines that we just like would not have expected in August. And so I'm just excited to see, it feels like, I know the JJ McCarthy injury, but other than that, it feels like all the big headliners are back. And so I'm excited that we've got like a nice season. I don't think there were any like major preseason injuries. Maybe I missed something during the Olympics when I was away for a few weeks, but it feels like a lot of teams are healthy. And so I think we're going to get a lot of good football. Of course, it won't last. But for now, I'm excited that just like a lot of these big name quarterbacks who missed a lot of time last year, they're going to be back in the fold for week 1. And we'll see how that plays out.
Albert?
I was actually like just piggyback on Mitch then, because like, and it's, mine's going to be a little more specific, but like just getting to see Aaron Rodgers and the Jets and like getting to see what we didn't get to see last year. And that went away so quick, you know, it was just 4 games and we had this idea of what they could be. And it wasn't just Aaron. It was like, what does Garrett Wilson look like? What does Breece Hall look like in the context of all of this, you know, and how you had all of these guys who like were ready to break out and become big stars and play on big stages, and we didn't get any of it. You know what I mean? Like, even the defensive guys. And so I just think, you know, getting to see, and I, you know, at the end, because we got like the extra year with Brady at the end, I tried to like appreciate watching him. You know, like I tried to appreciate, like, you know, like this is someone, you know, my kids are now getting the chance to watch him. You know what I mean? Like, and my kids are getting, and this is something like they should appreciate, and I'm going to appreciate. And I sort of feel the same way about Rodgers. For all the noise around him, he's a great, great, great football player and somebody that like we're going to remember as one of the best players ever to play that position. And I think he's got a really good team around him. And the storyline is just so rich. You know what I mean? Like, the storyline is just so much to it. Like, could you imagine Woody Johnson as the owner of a Super Bowl team, you know? And like,
I can't.
And then Robert Sala, Robert Sala, everything that he's been through, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, Nathaniel Hackett, like, think about that. Like, you know what I mean? Like that could be an incredible redemption story. what they went through like last year with Greg Knapp, or maybe it was 2 years ago now, but what they went through with Greg Knapp. And it's just, there's so much, and maybe this is just like, I don't know, maybe the journalist in me or whatever, but there's just so much there that if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, that we were going to get to talk about an experience last year. And now the chance that we'll get to do it this year, I think could be really, really cool. And, you know, obviously right off the bat there, we're going to get to see him on Monday night against maybe the best roster in football in San Francisco.
It's going to be fun. What am I most looking forward to? Just the Lions dominating everybody. You know, I mean, let's be real. You know, like Dan Campbell winning games by 15, 20 points and the fallout of NFL teams trying to find another person like Dan Campbell, which is funny because, you know, it happened during the Rex Ryan era, right, where you tried to, Rex Ryan made it to back-to-back AFC title games, and they're like, oh, wow, people who are actually themselves in authentic work, and then you try to find another person like Rex Ryan, and you just fail miserably because it's just like a bunch of people trying to act like Rex Ryan. Imagine now someone trying to act like Dan Campbell and not be immediately snuffed out as a total fraud, you know?
Like, and I'm sure you got this, Connor, in your time that you got to spend with Dan, but like, it hit me. So every year, my training camp trip, I try to avoid being with a team on their day off, and sometimes it's unavoidable. So one of the times that it was unavoidable was the 2021 summer. And I had like called some of the people in the Lions. I'm like, can I come in on your day off? So the players aren't there, but it just worked out where everyone was off on this Sunday and said, I want to visit with you guys, but like, it just sort of works out that I'm there on a day off. Is it okay if I come in and I can at least meet with Dan and Brad, you know, their GM and head coach. And so they set it up and I spent, I think, 2.5 hours with Dan. And it struck me halfway through that conversation. I'm like, this guy's way smarter than people think, way smarter than people think. And I knew him a little bit before then, but not great. And the more he went through it, the more like, holy crap. You know what I mean? Like, and then it reminded me so much of Vrabel in this one way, in that he is totally okay with you thinking he's a meathead when he's actually the smartest guy in the room. And he doesn't mind if he legitimately doesn't care what anyone else thinks of him. He's legit. He's just authentically himself. His players see that. His players also know. And this is the mistake that you make sometimes, right? This is like the Jeff Saturday mistake. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Antonio Pierce. But there's been like a bunch of ex-players that where it's really worked of late. Vrabel, you know, Kevin O'Connell was an ex-player. DeMeco Ryans, right? And so, you know, I think what it is with the ex-players is that, you know, like the you, it's, this generation of players isn't like just going to do it because they told you to, right? Like you have to win them over. And I think the advantage of hiring an ex-player is that you sort of have that first hurdle cleared when you hire them, right? Like they don't need to earn the respect. The ex-player doesn't need to earn the respect of the locker room the same way that like Mike McDaniel or Matt LaFleur, one of those guys has to win the locker room, right? So the thing is, like, about, yes, you have that first hurdle cleared, but then you still have to show them that you can help them do their jobs well. And Dan Campbell so emphatically cleared that hurdle and got the most out of everybody. You know, like, you know, Jared Goff's like the best example, but there are other ones. Like, he got more out of Frank Ragnow. He got more out of Taylor Decker. He got like all the guys he inherited, right? Like, and we've talked a lot about the guys he brought in, but there are a bunch of guys there that he inherited that like are better players because they're playing for Dan Campbell. And so like, I think that that's the thing that a lot of people miss about Dan. In fact, like I remember I was talking to Goff about it a few weeks ago and I said to him, like, I'm like, I think it strikes me that Dan's emotional intelligence, and this phrase will resonate with you, Mitch, because it's one that Jeffrey Lurie likes to use, but Dan's emotional intelligence seems like it's off the charts. And Jared Goff, who played for Sean McVay, said to me, he is by far the best I've ever been around in that regard. And so I just think that part of it too, like beware about like hiring like the guy that you think is just a meathead and can come, because that's not what Dan Campbell is. Like there's so much more to it than just that, you know? And so I think that part of it is, Yeah, yeah, really. And you can see it when they practice too. You know, like the way I said to him, like after I watched them practice, I said to him, I'm like, it seems like you guys really know how to practice. Cause, you know, and you guys have been out at training camp practices. There'd be plays where you see, you know, like you see the hit, you see a collision where it's like, ooh, and like you're waiting for the guys to pop up because there's gonna be a fight. Like the day I was there, there was they've scrimmaged like the whole time, and there were three or four collisions like that. And the guys got up and patted each other on the butt and walked away. And I was like, okay, like this is a team that knows how to practice. Like, you know what I mean? This is a pro. This is a team full of pros. So there you go, Connor. Made you feel a little bit better about your Super Bowl pick in the end.
My one thing that is going to work out for last year, even though 6 of 7 teams in the NFC last year, guys, with the also 272, you know, Mrs. Lincoln, the play was not bad after all this. So credit to those guys. But all right. I mean, hey, we did it. We spoiled it for everybody. Listen if you want to, and if not, you know, we'll be back.
Can I just plug the one prediction yes. that I'm hoping to get right this year?
Yes.
Labor Day weekend tradition. Yesterday, we published my 9th annual Week 18 Sunday Night Football Flex Power Rankings. I don't even remember why I started doing this, but I power ranked all 16 games in Week 18. Trying to predict which one will be flexed to Sunday Night Football. I have never gotten it right. I'm like a prisoner to this thing now. I can't retire the bit until I get it right. I've gone with Dolphins Jets, which I know is crucial to your picks. Albert's talking about how excited he is for the Jets. Can't you picture it? Week 18, Dolphins at Jets on Sunday Night Football. McDaniel and Tua trying to win in the cold weather. Aaron Rodgers on primetime football again. This has to be the year that I'm right. I also
So it has to be for the division then, right?
No. Funny.
I mean, it could be to get in.
They have been trending this way.
They just have to be like...
Trust me, I have studied this. They have made some tweaks. Now that they added the Saturday flex, some of the like less desirable division title games can get shifted over to Saturday. If it's like an NFC South division game, they would sometimes rather make Sunday night like one team fighting for a wild card and one team fighting for the division, or sometimes both wild cards. If you remember that bonkers Raiders Chargers game 2 years ago, where everyone was mad at Brandon Staley for the timeout, that was a fight for a wild card spot because the Chiefs had already wrapped up the AFC West. So it doesn't have to be for the division, but that's the one I'm going there. If I get any predictions right all season, I want it to be that one.
I love that. I really do. I genuinely do. Lord knows the big mystery there is, would I even get credentialed for that game? Who knows? I might have to buy a ticket and watch it in the stands, which might be kind of fun, right? With the Jets people, you know?
Man of the people. Yeah. Man of principle, man of the people, Connor Orr.
That's it. That's why we do this. That's why we're here. Thank you guys for sticking with us through everything. It is an absolute pleasure, and I think I can speak for all of my colleagues on this podcast, that we are able to come to you as Sports Illustrated and produce content for the 2024 football season. We are thrilled. We are so excited to be back. Such a great vibe here at our place, and the fact that all of you guys stuck with us means more to us than we can ever truly say. So let's enjoy some football. Bet responsibly.
Here. Let's go.
Yes. And stick with us. We'll see you next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Fuel restrictions apply.